Good day, my name is Ross, and I really am excited to share with you in Bible school today. As a student 20 years ago on campus, Bible school touched me deeply. I really got to know Jesus, and I got to love him, and I got to love the Word, studying the Word. To locate the session today, we're busy with the Trinity, speaking about God as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, triune God, one in nature. And last week, in the previous module, we looked at the Father, that God is a Father, the creator and sustainer of all things, who upholds everything in his will. He's the one who provides, and he's the one who purposes a life for every one of us. We live in his grace and in his purpose. Today, we're looking at Jesus Christ, his person. In the weeks to come, we will look at his works. But about the person Jesus Christ, it is important for us to know that we only know God as a triune God because of the coming of Jesus Christ, his Son. It's in the coming that we know that the Father sent the Son and the Son sent the Spirit into the world. It's in his coming that we understand that God is a triune God. Daniel Migliori wrote a great piece on the Trinitarian nature of God. And this is what he wrote in his summation. He said that God is eternally self-giving, other-regarding, community-forming love. It's a big sentence and a powerful summary of the nature of the triune God. How do we know this God? He said that God is the one who is always self-giving. We know from the Trinitarian nature of God that God is the one who always gives of himself. He is self-giving. He's selfless in the way that he gives himself. The Father gives his Son. The Son gives his Spirit. And the Spirit gives the church to the world. That God in his nature is a giving God, a self-giving God, a selfless God. And secondly, that God is self-giving, always other-regarding. He never considers himself. He always considers the other. And we can see it in his Trinitarian nature, but also in the coming of Jesus to the earth. We see that God never regards himself, but always the other. He is selfless in that nature. And then thirdly, God is self-giving, other-regarding, community-forming love. That he's a God who always includes, that always embraces. We'll see that Jesus is the one who came to announce and to reveal the heart of God that is merciful, inclusive, embracing of those that are other than him. God is self-giving, other-regarding, community-forming love. But it's only in the coming of Jesus Christ that we know this. So let's look at the nature, the identity of Jesus Christ. Why is this important for me and you? Why should it bother us to study Jesus or to get to know Jesus? If the Father created me and you for his purpose, if the Father has a will for me and you, a goal for my life, if my life has meaning, then we should study Jesus Christ. Because Paul wrote in his great epistle to the Romans that whom he foreknew, he also predestined us to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Paul wrote to us that Jesus is the penultimate goal, that the identity and the nature of Jesus Christ is the penultimate goal of me and you, that we should be conformed to his image, that our life goal and that God's purpose for us is that we embrace the nature and the work of Jesus Christ, that he is a model, the firstborn for us, that we should emulate him. And for that, he invites us and said, come and follow after me, come and study me, come and know me. That's the great cry of Paul, isn't it, in Philippians chapter 3. When he wrote that for me to live is Christ, to die is gain. And later he said that this is my life goal. I forsake all others, count it as nothing, but I stretch myself out to know him and to become like him. Philippians chapter 3, verse 10. It's the life and the motto of Paul. And that's the invitation of God, that we should emulate, copy the lifestyle of Jesus Christ. But it's not just for me and you that it's important. It's amazing that the doctrine of Jesus, or the nature and the purpose and the life of Jesus, has been the most impactful in all of history. He is the figure in history for the past 2,000 years that has been the most controversial and the most inspirational of all life. Christianity is the biggest religion in the world, and it's not just in Christianity that we study Jesus, but the number of books, articles, movies, shows, discussion, lectures on Jesus Christ for the past 2,000 years outnumbers anything else in comparison to him. He's the most controversial person. And it's possible for us to, in this in these many writings to completely miss who the person of Jesus is and what his will for me and you is. It is possible for us to, in these Bergian writings, to actually miss his heart and his nature for us. C.S. Lewis rightly said, that if we consider the life and the teachings of Jesus, no one can simply regard him as a good man or as a kind person or simply as a prophet. If we take seriously the history of Jesus Christ, his life and his message, then we will either take him as a lunatic, one who is crazy, who thinks that he's God and has a call from God, we should wipe him away as that, or we should disregard him as a liar, one who lied and one who just spreads deception purposefully, but at the great cost of his own life, or as all the church through the ages in studying the nature and the identity of Christ, if we look at him, we come to the conclusion that he's neither liar or lunatic, but that he truly is Lord of all. If we study him, we will have to make a decision of who he is. So let's do that right now. In the first 5 centuries, there were many councils that wrote down many creeds about the nature of Jesus Christ, who he is, about his true identity. You will find, first of all, that the Nicene Creed was written in 325 after Christ because of controversy that stated that Jesus Christ was not really God, but simply one sent of God, one who was also part of God's creation, but a prominent one in God's creation. And the council had to sit down and to declare and to study, to evaluate everything, to come to the conclusion that no, truly, Jesus Christ is God. About 20 years after that, in Constantinople, in around 381 after Christ, there was another big council that wrote another creed about the identity of Jesus Christ. Because this time around, the big question was Jesus really man? And the council came to the conclusion that yes, Jesus was truly a man who had emotions, who had a real soul, who felt betrayal, felt pain, felt thirst, was a real person, a real man like me and you. And in the century after that, in Ephesus, around 431 after Christ, Nestorius challenged the church leaders of the day, stating that Jesus truly had two natures, and that at times he would take on the nature of the Word of God, and at other times he would take on his human nature as Jesus of Nazareth. And the council had to sit down to listen, to evaluate, to study, and to come to the conclusion that no, truly Jesus Christ is both man and God simultaneously inseparable the whole time. And the last council, the great council in the 5th century, in Chalcedon, 451 after Christ, the council had to sit again on the same matter to decide the nature of Jesus Christ. And it came to the most beautiful conclusion that Jesus is always God, always man, always inseparable, always the same, without division and without change, that his nature is perfectly merged as God and man simultaneously. Now, the question that you're going to ask me is, why is this necessary? Who cares about the nature of God? We know that he's God and we know that he's man. Look at his life, look at his teaching. And this is the great question. And this is the reason why these councils sat together for 200 years to figure out how can we articulate the true nature of Jesus Christ? Because if Jesus is truly the Son of God, who is truly God and truly man, then he is the only mediator between man and God. He's the only one that can truly mediate between man and God. Job, in all of his sufferings, he spoke to his friends that sat around him in Job 9:33. And he cried out to them in a desperate state. And he cried out and he says, is there no person who can lay his hand both on me and on God as a mediator, who can bring us together, who can speak on both our regard? Because he says, God is so holy and so removed and so far away from me, and I'm so close on earth and I'm a finite man suffering. Who can bring my case to this great God? And Jesus Christ is the answer in Job's cry. He is truly God, truly man, who can mediate between man and God. We're going to look at a text in your books now, in John chapter 1. John chapter 1 is amazing. It's the gospel. The fourth gospel is different from the other three gospels because it doesn't start with the genealogy of Jesus Christ. and it doesn't start with the baptism, but it starts way before that. And I'd like you to see how John introduces the nature of Jesus Christ to these people.
Take 10 minutes to reflect on and discuss this session's key Bible passage together with others in your class. If you are watching on your own, take a few minutes to reflect on the key Bible passage by yourself.
The Gospel of John, chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through Him, and without Him nothing was made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. This man came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which gives light to every man coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and full of truth. John bore witness of him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me is preferred before me, for he was before me.' And of his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, who is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him." I wondered, in looking at this text and discussing this text, what you noted about John stating that Jesus is the perfect mediator between man and God. Because this was the intended purpose of this text. When John started his letter to the church, the believers in Ephesus, he knew that they all understood the context of the city. That in this great city of Ephesus, 600 years before John wrote this letter, that Heraclitus, the father of science, planted the first university in Ephesus. And people from all over the world came to study the reason why things are as it is. Heraclitus, a great Greek philosopher, took over from Plato and Aristotle a few hundred years before him. And they studied everything about the Logos. Now, for the Greek mind, they also understood, like we do, that there is a big divide between divinity and creation. And for the Greek mindset, it was impossible for them to think that they could approach or relate to the gods, divinity, in their mindset. Because everything on creation was fallen and everything creation was corrupted. Matter itself was evil. But God was spirit and God was good and God was perfect. And there's this big divide. And for Heraclitus, taking the term from Plato and Aristotle before him, he studied what they called as the mediator, the Logos, that which connects earth with divine, the principles or the reason, translation for the word Logos there, principle or the reasons for things, why does things work as it is? And this Logos was, in a sense, a bit of a mediator between that which is the will of God and that which happens fallen on earth. And when John wrote his letter to this Greek audience, to his people in Ephesus, that was the chosen word that he used. Heraclitus, 600 years before Christ, planted the first university and called everyone with him to study the reason why things was as it is. He would, for instance, look at the weather and ask the question, what is the Logos for the meteors? What is the reason why the clouds or the weather does what it does? In Cape Town, we ask the same question every single day. He would ask the question, what is the reason for the weather, the meteorology? And we still have that term, meteorology, today. We still have the term biology for his question, why does the bios, why does life, plant life, function as it is? What is the reason? What is the cause? What is God's design with it, in a sense? We'd look at psychology. We'd look at all the logos, all the studies, the fields of study that we still do today to understand what it is. And when John wrote his when John wrote his letter, this was his purpose. In chapter 20, verse 31, sums up the whole purpose of his book. He says, all these things were written so that you may believe. The reason for the writing is so that you may believe. And when he starts this letter, this is why he says, why we can believe in Jesus as the perfect mediator between man and God. And I'm going to look at four reasons just quickly, and I want you to see it in your text with me. The first reason is this one. He says, in the beginning was the Word. He says the Logos is eternal. He has no beginning. He has no ending. He is the eternal. Like God, He's eternal, and therefore He's the perfect mediator with no beginning and no ending. We can believe in Jesus. We can trust in Jesus as the perfect mediator between man and God, because like God, He is eternal, and He's eternally interceding between us and God. The second reason that he states why we can believe in Jesus as the Logos, the perfect mediator between man and God, is because he says the Word was face to face with God. The Greek word there, the Word was with God. The Logos stared God in his eyes. Intimate picture of two people intimately being face to face with one another. And John says that the reason why Jesus is the perfect mediator between man and God is because of the intimacy that he has with the Father. He can bring me in the face of the Father. He can bring me intimate. He's relational and bring me in relationship with the Father. The third reason that he states, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and then he says the Word was God. A powerful statement, a very powerful, controversial statement in his day, stating that the Logos, the mediator between man and God, is not lower than God himself, but he is God, and therefore he can forgive sins. I mean, in John's gospel, that's the question. Can you forgive sins? And Jesus says, well, take up your bed and walk. Of course I can. Of course I can. He is God himself, and therefore he is powerful and to forgive sins and to bring us to the Father himself. He is a powerful mediator. He is God. And then he punches to the fourth point that is very important for us, why we can relate to the mediator between man and God. He says, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. He's saying, and the picture is beautiful there, dwelt among us. Greek word there, he pitched his tent among us. Jesus came to camp with us, to live with us, to share our existence. And that's especially why the Gospel of John is so powerful, because the Christology is high. Jesus is clearly shown as God in the Gospel, but then Jesus is most clearly seen as man in this Gospel than any other Gospel. We see Jesus hungry. We see Jesus thirsty. We see Jesus tired. We see Jesus overwhelmed with emotion at the death of his friend, overwhelmed with fear. Look at in the Garden of Gethsemane, we see Jesus betrayed by a friend, heartbroken. We see Jesus in the fullness of his humanity. He is truly man. And because he's truly man, he can identify with us. Like that beautiful section, Hebrews chapter 2, verse 17 states beautifully. It says that Jesus had to become perfectly like his brothers, fully like his brothers, that he might be a powerful mediator and a high priest for them. Hebrews 2:17. Hebrews 4:16 says the same thing. It says we can have confidence to approach his throne room of grace clearly because he has compassion for us, because in every sense he suffered like us and was tempted, yet without sin. Jesus is the perfect mediator, John says here, because he is God, he's eternal, he's in the face of God himself, and he fully embraced our humanity. He fully embraced our humanity so he can mediate between us and God. How confident. In this module, concluding, we've seen Jesus as the Son of God. Jesus is truly the Son of God. It's his nature, it's his identity. It's been questioned for generations and for centuries, but the Christian faith banks on this reality that Jesus is fully God and fully man, and therefore we can approach him with confidence, knowing that he can truly mediate between us and God and bring peace between us and the Father. In the next sessions, we look at the work of Jesus as king, priest, prophet, and as judge.
Take 15 minutes to reflect on and discuss the following points together with others in the class. If you are watching on your own, take a few minutes to reflect on the points by yourself. You can find the discussion points in your Bible school handbook. Look out for the Living the Word sections in each session.